The next paper on the program is Observations of Comet Abe 1970G by Douglas Geis and Richard McWaters of the Toronto Centre. I see Mr. McWaters is going to present, or both are going to present the paper.
Well, good morning. It was last summer, 1970, when we first heard about Comet Abe, and it was immediately after, you'll probably recall, the appearance of Comet Tego-Sato-Kosaka and Comet Bennett, both exceedingly bright comets and both very interesting comets. And in our center, anyways, the Toronto Center, there were some excellent observations done of both of these comets. So we decided that perhaps with the next comet that came along, we should get down into it and try it out on our own and see just how many observations or what quality of observation we could come up with our own comet. So the next comet that came around came in the middle of the summer, and this was Comet Abe, the seventh comet of 1970. And between the dates of August 17th and October the 6th, we made about 25 observations of this comet. And what we hope to do today in the minutes that follow, Richard McWaters and myself, Douglas Geis, are going to present some of the highlights of the comet as it came to perihelion and passed the sun. So we were, of course, using just basically amateur instruments, and we were observing from a very poor location in Don Mills, Ontario, right in the midst of the lights of Toronto. So please keep this in mind as we go through.
Okay, well, we first heard of the comet from James Kemp, who is a lecturer at the McLaughlin Planetarium. And he receives the IAU circulars, which have the ephemeris for new comets. And since he was such a good friend of ours, he let us borrow this circular so that we could plot a rough path for the comet on Atlas Chaley. And so once we had this, we took out our two handmade 6-inch reflectors and tried to find the comet. And then later on, we started using binoculars because we found that this saves an awful lot of time in trying to find the comet. And so once we found the comet, we'd make a drawing, including the field stars for later positioning of the comet. And we'd note the size and shape. And unfortunately, we did not make any magnitude estimates because we felt that we couldn't make accurate enough ones, you see, because we didn't have the out-of-focusing method where you rack the eyepiece out and compare the comet to an out-of-focus star. And so after we had finished all our 25 observations, we took our positions that we had plotted on Atlas Chaley, and using our drawings of the field stars, we used Atlas Borealis and Ellipticalis to get more accurate positions. And then just recently, we used Atlas Varenberg to get an accuracy of 0.3 minutes in right ascension and 3 minutes in declination. And so on the following slides, we'll have 15 of our 25 observations with these new accurate positions.
We'll go right into the first slide, and we'll get a look at what the comet actually looked like. I'll get a bit of focus on that. This is our title slide, of course, and I'm afraid the Comet Abe never looked quite as bright or as amusing as the comet we have up in the top right-hand corner. The caricature in the of the nucleus of the comet happens to be the staff representative of our high school astronomy club. Just one word of explanation. Next slide. So here's our first observation. This was on August the 17th, and we first saw the comet 45 days after its discovery. It was discovered on July 3.72 by a Japanese astronomer, Abe, who found the comet when it was in Aries near the star Alpha Aretis, or Hamel. And the word came through about the comet through the Tokyo Observatory on the IAU circulars. So this first night was a Monday night, And it happened to be one day past full moon, so the scene was not very good. And as you can see, the comet was at this time in just below Cassiopeia. You can see down here in the small little constellation charts we've put in. And it was just rising in the east at this time. And we had a very difficult time in finding the comet at first. The ephemerises, if you've ever tried to use one, the original ephemerises are not very accurate at all. And what happened was we ended up about spending approximately 90 minutes trying to find the thing. We finally did, and this is something what it looked like. It was very faint, and it was a sort of a globular-like object, and with a very bright center, but not really a developed nucleus. We couldn't say that there actually was a nucleus. Ken Pylon was also out in this night, and he predicted that the comet was about 7.4 magnitude. We're already need to get that changed around. The comet looked like a globular, but it differed from a globular, and that usually with globulars you can begin to resolve some stars with a 6-inch telescope. And this was had a very strange appearance, sort of what you might almost call a granular type of nebulosity. Our next observation was on the 20th. We'll move on to the 24th. On this particular night, the comet was moving up towards Cepheus, about halfway between Cassiopeia and Cepheus. You can see how it has moved. The coma around the comet is getting much larger, and it's about 125 seconds diameter of arc. And the S there stands for the scene, which is a scale from 1 to 10, which basically measures how steady your objects are. Well, if you have a very wobbling and unsteady object, you'd give it a scene of 1. And if it was a crystal clear, a very steady object would be 10. The T stands for transparency, and that's on a scale from 1 to 5. 5 being where you can see about 5th or 6th magnitude, and 0 where you can see absolutely nothing. So, next slide, please. Okay, we're going back one day. We're sort of jumping around a bit. Just in retrogress then, the comet on this particular night was exceptionally better than our first observation because the scene was 9, the transparency was 4. It was a very good night, and the comet looked appreciably better, which I can tell you encouraged us to go on a bit more in our observations rather than stop right there and then. So one more slide for August. Next one, I believe. Well, August basically then, the comet was introduced to our skies and began to make a showing.
Okay, well now we're into September. I think this was the first day of school. And of course the first day of school usually brings on the blahs. So we were very glad that it was clear that night, so that we could come out and look at the comet. And this is another average night. It's usually hazy, as you can see by the transparency of 2. And the diameter has increased to just under 180 seconds. And then we had a run of about 4 days in a row. This is the 5th. And the star right by the comet was occulted a few minutes earlier. And when I first found the comet was just starting to come across the star, so I decided to make a rough timing just to see how long it would take. And it was about 20 minutes to move its own diameter, which I guess was about 180 seconds of arc. Here we have the 6th, and there's another star occulted this night also. And the comet has become somewhat larger, and it's now moved into the constellation of Draco, and this is almost directly overhead now. And this is the first time we could see it in the 6x30 finder scope. And also, the September the 7th, this time it passed just north of another small star, and it's another average night again. And here we have the 9th. Now one interesting thing here is that you can notice maybe a slight protrusion on this side of the comet. And its diameter has increased. And tonight was a much better night. Seeing of 9 and a transparency of 4 is one of the best nights. And the comet was much brighter, and the protrusion, you see, was much larger. And also the diameter had increased again. Now here we are on a Saturday night, so we decided to take our telescopes up to the David Dunlop Observatory to set up for the public demonstration that they have. And of course the skies up there are much better, so we had a seeing of 9 and a transparency of 5, maybe 6 if there was a 6 on the scale. And as you can see, the diameter has increased very much to 300 seconds of arc. And if we have the next, if you can get a bit focus it a little better. Oh, okay. Well, now this is a photograph that I took on the 19th of Comet Abby, and it's a 40-second exposure on Tri-X at f2.8 with a 50-millimeter lens. And if I can, yes, it's in backwards, but let's see, the comet, we've got it upside down. Hercules is, Hercules is here. This is the top going back along here, and one arm comes up along here, I think, and No, it comes down here. This is M13 right here, this fuzzy blob. And the arm comes down here, and this little fuzzy thing here is the comet. Not much to look at, but at least it recorded in 40 seconds. Here we are on the 27th. This is another good night, not as good as some of the other ones, but the comet is now past maximum brightness, which was about 5.4 on the 15th, I think, and so the diameter is decreasing and the magnitude also. Here we are, the last day of September. This is another special night. One of our friends had just recently completed his handmade 10-inch reflector, F6, so we decided to look at the comet through that. And it again increased in brightness and diameter, mostly because of the light-gathering power of the 10-inch. And now the comet is approaching the sun and getting very low on the horizon. So later on it was increasingly hard to find.
Well, we're getting to, getting into October now, down to our final observations. The comet was getting into a rather unfavorable position. It was moving constantly closer and closer to the sun, and it was getting down into the Hercules and Corona Borealis region. And as you know, there's two globular clusters in Hercules, M92 and M13. And in fact, the comet was getting so close to these two globular clusters that it was terribly easy to find a globular cluster and think you'd found the comet. However, we were sort of spared this fairly often. Well, October the 1st was another fairly decent night. We didn't make any note of the diameter of the comet, but it was still fairly bright. It was past its brightest point, which was, I think, around the 24th, 15th of September, when it got to a brightest of about 5.7 magnitude. It didn't get any brighter than that, but it was getting somewhat dimmer. It was about 6.0 magnitude on this particular night. And the interesting thing about tonight's observation, as you can know, we've got an uncharted star in the remarks, and we've got it pointed out here. But I'd ask you to try to keep in mind this configuration. Let's see. Yeah, these three stars here. And we'll go on to the next slide. And this is a picture of Atlas Chaeli, and the comet was on this particular night right down in this region. And we noticed something very interesting. This particular star here was in our field, and we could see that all right. But up here, where we do have another star marked in afterwards, we saw a star there, but it wasn't marked on the chart. And the interesting thing about this star was it was at least as bright as any of these stars in here, and yet it was not marked on the chart. So we thought for a second, and we got all sorts of wild theories worked up about what this thing could be. And we thought it might be an erratic variable. We even thought it might be a nova. So we decided our curiosity had to be answered, and we wrote a letter to Dr. John Hurd of the David Dunlop Observatory. And it turned out that this particular star was actually a very common star with the designation of BD positive 28 degrees 2545. And this particular star actually had a magnitude of 7.7, and the limiting magnitude of this particular star chart was 7.75. So I guess all that we can add to this is that we can't really trust the star chart when it was near its limit. Next slide. Well, the comet is moving towards the sun now, and this is our last observation. It was one day before first quarter moon, and we still only saw a very small hint of a tail. One night when we were using a 10-inch telescope, we thought we might have seen a tail, but if you'd seen the issue of November 1970 of Sky and Telescope, you probably saw the photographs there with the very slight tail that was in it. This, to see the tail, actually, with the eye rather than in a photograph, is exceedingly difficult, and we can't say for sure that we actually ever did see it. Well, the comet went from here, after our last observation, to perihelion on October the 20th. It was not a sun-grazing comet. Its distance from the sun at perihelion was about 103 million miles, and after this, passed the sun, and it disappeared into the morning sky, and finally off into the depths of our solar system once again.
So that's all the slides.
Yes, what we did first off was try to get a star field drawing, and then using the Atlas Chaeli, we got a position with within a reasonable accuracy. From there, I just recently got an Atlas Barenberg, which is a photographic surface, had a limit of about 12th magnitude, and using this particular chart, we were able to get some better and better positions. In fact, with our slides, we found that in most cases, you can get an accuracy of about 0.3 minutes in right ascension. Probably the position, I would imagine, and probably the characteristics of the comet itself. Its size, its composition, the various features of the comet, and of course, the magnitude that we never got around to making this. I think it's the
most important.
Well, that's the way we made the drawings, you see. They're not, the comet didn't look at all like that, really. It was more all that continuous buzz. It's just we made it darker in the center.
I don't think on this particular comet, it wasn't an extremely spectacular comet, and I don't think we ever actually got a developed nucleus. What actually we got was almost sort of like a star, almost a star-like sort of point, a very luminous point in the center of the comet. And whether you can count this as being a nucleus or not, I'm not sure. That's something that's true. Any other questions?